Morning. Today's daf in Tzvachim is Lamed Beis. We are in the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Alpha Med Beis. We're starting the new parak, third parak of the Masechta. The first parak of the Masechta took us a Torah about Machshava, specifically that of Shinui Kodesh, the owner of the carbon, or I should say better, the Kohen who's doing the Shechita of a carbon owner could do it as well. We're going to actually discuss that in the beginning of this morning. But the in the event that the Kohen who does the Avoda tries to change the designation of a carbon to Shlomim, and tries to change it to an Ola, what becomes of such a carbon? We learned throughout the first parak that the carbon's still fine. It's just disconnected. It's detached from its owner. So with notable exceptions of carbon Pesach, Bizmano, and carbon Chatas. That's the first parak of the Masechta. Second parak of the Masechta, so also treated us to more concepts regarding Machshava. But also it talked about who can and cannot do the Avoda. Who's disqualified from doing the Avoda in the Mishnah in the beginning of the second parak. Gave us an extraordinarily long laundry list of people who cannot do the avoda, both by kohanim and non-kohanim as well, all non-kohanim. But even within the world of kohanim, certain kohanim can't do the avoda. We discussed that extensively throughout the second parak, and then the end of the second parak. So the Gemara dived into the topic of pigul and spent some considerable amount of time talking about various forms of pigul and how to derive the surma pigul from the Torah. We start now the third parak of the Masechta. The third parak of the Masechta opens up with a topic which we already discussed earlier, but the Gemara, the Mishnah over here is going to be tackling this topic head on, and that is the Shechita. There are dollar avodos. Look, it's the ABCs of doing the avoda with the karban, and that is that when it comes to the essential part of the karban, so that's the avodas that are done with the blood. There are four avodas that are done with the blood. So there's Shechita, Kabbalah, Holacha, and Zrikas Adam. Shechita, if we didn't know any better, we would have said, but we know better. We know better at this point in time in the Masechta already. But if we didn't know any better, we would have said it has to be done by the Kohen. All the avodas have to be done by a Kohen. Meaning they're avodas. Meaning they're part of the temple service. All temple service has to be done by the Kohen. And so therefore, all aspects of the avoda have to be done by a Kohen. And I would have said that every aspect of the avoda has to be done by the Kohen, Shechita included. As we already learned earlier, but again, the Mishnah tackles this topic straight on, and that is Shechita can be done by non-Kohen. Shechita can be done by non-Kohen. Does that mean it's not an avodah? Well, can't say that, because it's one of the dollar avodas. And on top of that, we know that if you have a machshava during Shechita, so that's gonna affect the animal. It's gonna affect the carbon. So, but you want to tell me that Shechita is an avodah? Well, Shechita is an avodah, so you can't have non-Kohenim do the Shechita. So Shechita, quite frankly, is confusing. Meaning, to put your finger on what exactly Shechita is, if you ask me it's an avoda, I say, of course it is. Well, can a non-Kohen do it? I said, well, that's of course true as well. We're going to learn that together in just a moment. So then it can't be an avoda, right? In fact, Rashi, just to add to the confusion, Rashi says, how do I know that a non-Kohen can do Shechita? Because Shechita is not an avoda. So, and for Rashi, now you end up in the circular loop of, well, I know that a non-Kohen can do Shechita because Shechita is not an avoda. So, Shechita is not an avoda, so then, how does Rashi view Shechita? Meaning, is it not part of the avoda? In other words, can you not have a machshava during Shechita? And as we're going to learn together in just a moment, of course you can have a machshava while doing the Shechita. So quite frankly, look, it's a confusion. It's, something which, I could try to explain and try to articulate, but how to view Shechita in terms of the context of an avoda? It is an avoda, it's not an avoda, maybe both are true. Okay, it's hard to describe exactly how to view Shechita, but with all that stated, we know what the halach is. The halach is very clear. The Mishnah, in fact, makes it very clear. Kol ha'psulim sheshachtu. Kol ha'psulim sheshachtu shechitas and kshera. So if you have anyone who's disqualified, so when they do the shechita is good, shechita is kosher. Shechita kshera, because shechita can be done by zarim, by non-kohanim, menashim can be done by women, avadim. Now, the word evident in the Mishnah over here, we can assume, although it may be an assumption, we could assume the Mishnah is talking about Nevekanani. In other words, there are two types of avadim. There's an Eved Ivri and there's an Nevekanani. Eved Ivri is a full-fledged Jew, meaning there's no Chiddush in the Mishnah telling us that an Eved Ivri could do the Shechita. He's a Jew, for all intents and purposes. It just happens to be that right now he's stuck in a job. So he can't get out for some time. But in other words, but as far as halach is concerned, he's a Jew. There are certain leniencies, or one in particular that I'm thinking about when it comes to an Eved Ivri, that a Jew can't do, and that is marry a Shivcha Kananis. But short of that, though, in other words, there's really no chiddush to say that our Mishnah is talking about an Eved Ivri. Most probably the Mishnah is talking about an Eved Kanani. Eved Kanani, in other words, Eved Kanani is half a Jew. And it's not the, not the best way to describe it, but in other words, he has the bris milah, he goes through tefillah, he's chayiv in the mitzvahs that a woman is chayiv in. So in other words, and most probably the Mishnah is talking about an Eved Kenani. Uvit Tmeim, here comes a big chiddush. A tami can do the shechita as well. Now that has a lot of logistic issues to it, that a tami doing shechita. Because if a tami is doing shechita, so what does that probably mean? Well, the Mishnah over here doesn't qualify what kind of tami we're talking about. If it's the tami mason, he's holding the knife is tami. And once he does the shechita, so then probably the animal's gonna be tami as well. So, or tamea. So anyway, but the, it does carry with it a bunch of logistic issues. But for our purposes right now, we could just simply say that, look, and also, by the way, let's just also point out another very simple logistic issue. A lot of tummy people can't even be in the Azara. Let me say that better. Let me say that more correctly. No tummy people can be in the Azara, right? In other words, where the limitations are is in Har HaBayis and Yerushalayim proper. But no tummy person can be in the temple courtyard, in the Azara. So it does carry with it a bunch of logistic issues, but the point of the Mishnah is that generally speaking, I know such a person is precluded from doing the Avodah, but he could do Shechita. Because again, Shechita is not an Avodah. So Veneshim V'Avodah V'Tmeim V'Afilah B'Kashe Kadashim. And it doesn't even matter what kind of carbon it is. I mean, it could be the highest level of carbon, Kashe Kachim. Still, all these people could do Shechita on the Kashe Kachim of Avashel Yutmeim Nogim B'Basar. Now the Mishnah over here kind of deals with one of the logistic issues, and that is that if he's tameh and he shechs the carbon, he can't touch the meat of the carbon by doing so, he'd be disqualifying the meat by the meat becoming tameh, so he shouldn't touch the meat post shechita. Now again, I know this presents the problem. Well, what do you mean? The meat didn't become tameh prior to the shechita, meaning he's tameh and he's touching the knife, and the knife is touching the animal, and so again, I'm not. You can go much deeper into this point of. How would it be possible logistically for the tummy to even shecht without communicating that tumah over to the animal? It's something that could be discussed in much greater detail. We're not going to be discussing it this morning, but it's something worth noting. Lefichach, the Mishnah goes on. Hein poslim b'machshava. Now, since they have now an entitlement to do shechita, meaning all the above that we just mentioned, since they have the entitlement to do shechita, that means that if they have a machshava while doing the shechita, so the machshava is going to have significance. And usually, I mean, good significance, but also bad significance. Meaning, going back to what we learned earlier in the Masechta, if they have a machshav of Shinui Kodesh, if they have a machshav of Pigol, in other words, whatever machshav they have, that normally a Kohen, if that Kohen would to do the Avodah, would affect the Karban, this non-Kohen, who's going to be doing the Avodah, if he has a machshava, is going to have the same effect on the animal as if a Kohen were to do it. Meaning, because these non-Kohanim were qualified to do the Shechita, so as a result of that, the Machshava is going to be a consideration and going to have the same effects. Okay. Before we go on in the Mishnah, there's just a really interesting discussion. If you take a look at the first Tosfos in the Perek. First Tosfos in the Perek, Shechita K'sher B'Nashim. Shechita K'sher B'Nashim. Now, Tosfos is going to give away some of the Gemara. I'll give away some of the Gemara right now. And that is, if you look at carefully the language of the Mishnah, the Mishnah says K'shera. K'shera, what tone does that set off? The tone of kshera means, it's not lechatchila, shouldn't do it a priori, but b'di'evit, it's okay. That's the language of the Mishnah. That's the language of kshera. So, shashchita kshera bizar v'nashim v'avadim v'tmeim. So the sense that you get from the Mishnah is that b'di'evit post facto would be okay, but certainly not lechatchila. We're going to learn together in the Gemara that's not true. Meaning, all these people mentioned the Mishnah kinshecht and kinshecht lechatchila. Why would the Mishnah then use the word kshera? Kshera is misleading. So the answer is because one of the people listed in the Mishnah is Tameh, and for the Tameh, it's certainly B'di'evin. It's not a lichatchila position to have a Tameh shechta karban. So for the Tameh, for the sake of the Tameh, the Mishnah wrote the words akshera, meaning B'di'evin. But for all the other people mentioned in the Mishnah, so then it would be lichatchila. And that would mean that including the list of people who could shechta karban lichatchila would be women. Tosfos makes the following observation. B'gmar muchach, the nashen shochtos afil lichatchila. Right, the Gemara is going to say, well, I gave it away already, but Tosfos knew the Gemara well before I did. So Tosfos points out that women can shecht and they can shecht lechatchila. How did not sheshechtu? The evan bishum debay lemistei tameim de lechatchila lo. And again, the only reason why the Mishnah chose the language of ksheira is for the tameh. Tameh shun shecht lechatchila. V'lo kamar bishum debay lemistei nashim dektani bereishim mikan shuva lamashikatsu behilchos eretz Yisrael. And then Tosfos quotes Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. Now, Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, I'd love to tell you more about it. It sounds like a really interesting sefer. It's discussed, I don't know where else it's discussed other than this particular point. Okay, but that just simply means that, you know, my knowledge base is limited. But in other words, if you asked me, Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, I'd say, sure, I heard of it. In other words, he has a strange comment regarding women in Shechita. He also has a couple of other strange comments as well, we're going to see all of his strange comments are at least the ones that Tosfos quotes over here. So Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, which obviously Tosfos regards, meaning it's a sefer, obviously predating Tosfos, so in other words, it was written sometime between the Gemara and Tosfos. My best guess is that he's an early Rishon, but again, I can't tell you much more about that. But if Tosfos is quoting him, obviously Tosfos is regarding him. So he says that he quotes Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, "Denashim lo yishchitu mibnei shadat and kala." So he quotes Hilchos Eretz Yisrael and says that women shouldn't shecht, and he says that shouldn't shecht meaning it's possible if they do so, or it's not preferred, whatever the case is, the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael was not in favor of women shechting. But Tosfos says, okay, but you read a Mishnah here in Zvachim, in the first Mishnah, the third paragraph of Zvachim, and you see very clearly, and again, we're going to see the Gemara as well, Gemara understood it this way as well, that women can shecht and women can shecht afil l'chatchila. Okay, So it's a tshuva. So Tosfos points out that you learn the Mishnah, and it's difficult for Hilchos Eretz Yisrael to take that position. Va'od kasa v'hem, shachav lo birech v'arm sheshach ha-shchita sapsula. And then the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael also quotes two other halachas. Both of them are really interesting, and they're really hard to defend. But I'll explain both. Another opinion of the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is that, let's say you shech without a bracha. So Hilchos Eretz Yisrael says shchita sapsula. Now that's, again, it's really hard to understand. Meaning, if you didn't make a bracha, so what have you missed now? You missed the din derabbanan, meaning the chachamim told us that when doing a mitzvah, so you should make a bracha. And Hilchos Eretz Yisrael says that it's so essential, it's so important, that if you didn't make a bracha, the shechita is a shechita psula. Hard to defend that position, why should that be? You did a proper shechita, you did a correct shechita. And now, because you failed to make a bracha, now they're gonna passel the whole animal, not passel. But you're gonna passel the shechita, and the shechita is no good, so it's really hard. And also Tosfos points out, aren't you shachar shechita psula? That if you shecht and you're not clothed, so then the shechita is going to be a shechita psula. Again, another position that's hard to understand why. You know, certainly it'd be more appropriate, and it goes without saying, it'd be more appropriate if the shochet was dressed when he shecht in the animal. But if he's not wearing clothing, okay, not wearing clothing may preclude him from making a bracha. And the two points of the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael may go hand in hand. But again, neither point is easy to defend. These are positions which are hard to defend. Venira, and Tosfos points out, Shehim Chumrus Ba'ama, Shaya Omer Oso Achacham Shekasav Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. And it could very well be, says Tosfos, that look, in other words, this Chacham who's the author of Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, so he's adopting a certain number of Chumras as it relates to Shechita. And so, but in other words, Alibad de Hilchos, in other words, according to the strict letter of the law, they're not actually, they're not baseline halachas, they're just simply Chumras that he has either adopted or he's trying to institute, whatever the case is, but the chumras ba'ama. Tosfos says they're stringencies. Okay, but certainly an interesting discussion. The Ashkenazim, in other words, for the Sephardim, I don't know. Let's put it this way. In other words, a lot of this discussion now becomes academic because, you know, I don't, women are not actually in the shlach house actually shechting. But the Ashkenazim, however, have adopted this as a practice, which is that it's not preferred for the Ashkenazic women to shecht. So says the Ramah. But then a really interesting sub discussion over here is that, in other words, this is the kind of thing where, well, what's the evidence that women don't shecht? Well, we don't see women shecht. Right? And in other words, then can evidence of not having a particular practice be evidence? Meaning women don't shecht. Okay, women don't shecht. In other words, they found better jobs. no offense to the shechting public. But in other words, it's just because we don't see something, lo re'inu, eino raya. Meaning just because we haven't seen something actually play out, it's not a proof whether or not they can or they cannot. Just simply means that we haven't seen it. But it doesn't mean that that's necessarily a raya. Right? The principle of lo re'inu, eino raya. Anyway. Really interesting discussion in Tosfos regarding women and shechita in general. But anyway, so let's go back to our Mishnah. Let's tackle our Mishnah. So our Mishnah has taught us that anyone who cannot do the avoda still is in the position where they can shecht. And furthermore, because they're shechting, if they have a machshava while doing the shechting, so the machshava is going to be taken into account and taken into consideration. next part of the mission, we're on the very top of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Kulan. Shekiblos Adam Chutzus Man of Chutzim Kamo. Now, if anyone does Kabbalah Saddam, meaning from the point of Kabbalah Saddam, that's avoda number two. If any of them do Kabbalah Saddam, and they have a consideration of either Chutz Zman of Chutzim Kamo, meaning they're not in a position to do Kabbalah Saddam. Kabbalah Saddam must be done by a Kohen, and so therefore, for all these people who do Kabbalah Saddam, so it's not regarded. And the Mishnah also wants to add a bonus point, which is that even if they have a Chutz Zman of Chutzim Kamo, because they are so disqualified from doing that activity, any machshava they have during that activity also is going to be disregarded as well. And therefore, if there is more dama nefesh, now again, dama nefesh is that blood that comes out immediately poshchita, that gush of blood, that spurt of blood that comes out, the life force of the animal coming out together with its blood. So if there's any more to be collected, so then fine, so then collect the extra blood. Otherwise, that's it. In other words, it's a lost opportunity. The mission now is telling us, what if there's any kind of involvement by a non-Kohen? So if a non-Kohen does the, let's say a Kasher were to do the Kabbalah, meaning a bona fide Kohen would do the Kabbalah Saddam, good. And he hands it over to Pasul, he hands it over to someone who's not qualified to do the Kabbalah Saddam. But that's fine though, because in other words, the original Kabbalah was done by a Kohen, and he simply is handing it over to a non-Kohen, Yachzer l'Kasher. So you take it back and you give it to the Kasher. Now you remember about 14 blad ago, the Daf Yudalid. So the Gemara had a lengthy discussion and a debate exactly how to give the parameters of halacha. Meaning, is halacha by definition walking, or is halacha just simply advancing the blood in the direction of the mizbeach? And even if you advance it, meaning let's say you pass it along, right? You remember a couple weeks ago we had that Mishnah, we called that Mishnah Psachim, where the Mishnah Psachim gave a beautiful description of Erev Pesach in the Beis Hamikdash, where they'd pass the blood from one coin to the next, and is not considered halacha. So if you say halacha does not require walking, so then that's halacha. That's good. But if halacha requires walking, so then how could the Kohanim do that? How could the Kohanim do that? So you remember the Gemara suggested that the last Kohen who got the blood, he'll take a step towards the Mizbeach, and then he'll sprinkle. But in any event, the Mishnah over here says that if the Kasher gives it over to the Pasul, hand it back to the Kasher. So just Rashi reminds us that if you take the position that halacha shlo beregel shmei halacha, that if halacha without walking is considered halacha, or in other words, advancing the blood is considered halacha, so then you have to just make sure that if you gave it to the non-Kohen and he was closer to the Mizbeach, the Kohen has to take it back, and not only take it back, but retrace the steps as well. Okay, Rashi, just a reminder of what we learned earlier in the Masechta. If let's say the Kohen accepted with his right hand, which is the only hand acceptable to collect the blood, and then he passes it to his own left hand, fine, just simply pass it back to your right hand, meaning again, once the blood's collected, so now you're good. If you accepted the blood in a Kli Kodesh, meaning in the Kli Sharis, what you're supposed to do, and then the blood gets poured into a Kli Chol, a non-consecrated vessel, so then you just simply pour it back into a Kli Kodesh. Again, once the blood's collected in the Kli Kodesh, it's good. Nishbach min HaKlel HaRitzpah V'Asva Kasher. Another halacha, which again, we also learned earlier in the Masechta, but we get to see it now again, and here we're seeing it in the Mishnah proper, and that is that if the blood falls onto the floor after it's collected in a bowl, so that's fine. Simply pick it up off the floor and put it back into the bowl, because once the blood is collected in the bowl, the dam is fine. Nasno agabe akevesh. You could put it back in the same bowl. In other words, the bowl's fine. That bowl's fine. Nasno agabe akevesh. Let's say now the blood is sprinkled onto the ramp. Shalok kenegede yisod, or it's sprinkled on the mizbech, a place on the mizbech where there is no base. We discussed already, how the yisod, the base of the mizbech, circles around only two sides of the Mizbeach and then juts into the two other areas. But there's going to be an entire corner of the Mizbeach that doesn't have Yesod, and the blood is never to be sprinkled on that corner of the Mizbeach. And if it's sprinkled on that corner of the Mizbeach, or Nasan es nitan lamata lamalan, ves nitan lamalan lamata, and if the blood is sprinkled on a place where it should not be sprinkled, meaning either blood that normally sprinkled on the lower portion of the mizbech sprinkled on the upper portion, or vice versa, or if the blood is sprinkled on the inner mizbech when it should have been sprinkled on the outer mizbech, or vice versa, so again, as long as there's dama nefesh, yachzor v'yikabel. Now again, a nice reminder of what we learned earlier, the Masechta, and that is sprinkling blood on the Mizbeach on an improper location of the Mizbeach. Shalom bimkomo. How do we view Shalom bimkomo? So you remember earlier in the Masechta, we had a machlokes hamorayim. Exactly how to view Shalom bimkomo. Shmuel took the position that Shalom bimkomo is considered makomo. That every place in the Mizbeach, meaning there is obviously an appropriate place where the blood needs to be sprinkled, but according to the opinion of Shmuel, Shalom bimkomo, that if I hit any place in the Mizbeach, Kim Kamo Dami. We learned that back in Chavavim and Beis. And so according to Shmuel, so how do you read our Mishnah? So that's a bit of a challenge. And the Gemara already noted that back in Chavavim and Beis. Because Shmuel's position is that you hit any part of the Mizbech, Kapar has been achieved. What did you lose by not hitting the right place on the Mizbech? What you lost, according to Shmuel, is that the Basar cannot be eaten. Meaning in order for the Basar to be eaten, you have to be hitting the correct location of the Mizbeach, depending on what kind of carbon it is. But if you miss that, if you miss the correct location, carbon still achieves kapara, the zrika, I should say better. Zrika still achieves kapara, it's just that you can't eat the blood. So according to Shmuel, how do you learn our Mishnah? So the Gemara already back on Chavav Amid Beis, Chav Zayin Amid Aleph, already tried to explain how Shmuel explains our Mishnah. However, the opinion of Rav Yochanan is Shalom Bimkomo Lav Kimkomo Dami. That if you hit the wrong place of the Mizbeach with the blood, so you have not hit the right spot in the Mizbeach. And so therefore the Mishnah reads a little bit better according to him, meaning by hitting the wrong location of the Mizbeach, so that's it. In other words, that Zrika no longer can be counted. It's totally discounted. Why don't you just remember the Gemara asked a question earlier. Why don't you just simply pick it up off the floor? If Rav Yochanan's position that Shalom Bimkomo Lav Kimkomo Dami, so then just pick it up off the floor. We just learned in the Mishnah. Nishbach ala ritzpah, that if it falls on the floor, so then you just simply pick it up. So why not do the same thing over here? So you'll remember the Gemara taught us that according to Rav Yochanan, no, falling on the floor is neutral. Meaning that's not zrika. That's just simply neutral. So just simply pick it up, put it back in the bowl. But once you make an attempt to do a zrika on the Mizbeach and you hit the wrong spot on the Mizbeach, so that's it. You can only get one shot at zrika. And if according to Rav Yochanan, Shalom bimkomo lav kimkomo dami, so that's it. In other words, this rika now is over. It's finished. So
you can go back and get it.
So if there's more dam and nefesh, that's exactly how he reads the Mishnah. So im yesh dam and nefesh yachzor kashav yikabel. So if there's more dam and nefesh, great. Otherwise, no. Otherwise, there's nothing you could do. It's too late.
And in that case, is where you need to put
them into a new klisharis. You could always reuse klisharis. In other words.
The dam
now is disqualified. Right, correct. Okay. All right, Adkan, that takes us through the Mishnah. We're in Lamed Beis Amid Aleph. We're starting the Gemara Shachtu Di'evin Lechatchil Lo. So Yeshech, so Bidi'evin, it's acceptable in Lechatchil Lo. In other words, like I said back in the Mishnah, but the Gemara now is just simply making the observation. In other words, the language of Shechita Kshira, that's post-facto language, that's Bidi'evin. And the Gemara says, Sheikh Shechita Di'evin Lechatchil Lo V'Riminu. But however, V'Shachar Shechita Bazar Kshera. Sheh Shechita Kshera Bazar V'Nashim V'Avadim V'Tmeim V'Afilu B'Kachi Kadashim. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa. The Braisa is here. The Braisa is also in Yuma as well. The Braisa says that V'Shachat and Yushecht, and the Braisa now qualifies. And when the Torah says Shecht, meaning who can Shecht? And the Braisa says, non-Kohanim can Shecht. Everyone we discussed in our Mishnah, the Braisa here discusses as well. A non-Kohen, a woman, an Evikanani, an Antami can all shech Rafilu B'Kachi Kedoshim, and they can even shech Kachi Kedoshim. Again, the Braisa says exactly what we learned back in our Mishnah. Or maybe no. Meaning the Braisa for a moment is suggesting maybe that's not correct. Amart V'chi Me'ain Bata Mechlal. Shenamar. So the Gemara says, let's go to the Psukim in Parshas Korach. V'atav v'necha itcha tishmurus kunaschem. L'chol d'var ha-mizbeach. Yachol ha-peshchita. The Torah says, you and your children are going to have to preserve the kahuna and safeguard the kahuna. And l'chol d'var ha-mizbeach, anything relating to the mizbeach. So if I read that pasuk, the impression you get is that a kohen has to be involved. L'chol d'var ha-mizbeach, which would include shchita as well. Talmud Lomar. So that's the havamin of the Braisa. But then we go back to the beginning of Vayikra, Vishachar ben Bakar lifnei Hashem, Vihi krivo. So and the rest of the pasuk is really important. Vihi krivo bnei Aaron kohanim, meaning Yeshecht, and then who is Makriv? And Makriv over here means Kabbalah Sadam. And then afterwards, when do the Kohanim get involved? Only mekabalah ve'elech, mitzvah kahuna. From Kabbalah and onward, then you need a Kohen that's involved. Limit al shchita shikshir b'chol adam. So that means to tell me that anything prior to the Kabbalah, when I say anything, I really only referring to one thing, which is shchita. So shchita can be done by a non-Kohen. When you read the Braisa, the impression you get is that a non-Kohen is shechting, not b'diavid, but l'chaschila. Meaning the only time that I need a Kohen's involvement is only mekabalah ve'elech. Anything prior to that, you can have a non-Kohen involved, meaning a czar, and they could do it even l'chaschila. So the Gemara says, you're right. Hu adin dafi l'chaschila nami. You're right. In other words, the shechting that's done by a non-Kohen is a din l'chaschila. Umishum dekabai lemisei temeyim d'l'chaschila lo, gzeri shema yugu b'basar, tana sheshachtu. And the only reason why the Mishnah uses the language of b'dieved is only for the tamei. A tamei cannot shech l'chaschila. It is not a preferred position to be in. And why? For reasons which we already articulated. But we saw it in Tosos. Now we're seeing it in the Gemara. The reason why is because we're afraid that if a tamei shechts, so what the tamei is going to do is he's going to touch the meat of the animal, and he's going to render the animal tamei, and therefore disqualified to be brought as a carbon. So as to not get to that point, so you know what? Don't have the tamei involved at all, and lechachila tamei shouldn't shecht. Period. But in other words, for all the other people mentioned in the Mishnah, zarim, noshim, avadim, so for those, so they can shecht, and they can shecht afilu lechachila.
Besides the Mishnah, how do we know
the
Zar
can shecht? What does that mean? Where's
the source that the Zar can
shecht? We just learned the Braisa. The Braisa tells us. Aaron. Only at Hakrava, meaning Hakrava is understood as Kabal Sadam. Only from Hakrava and onward do I need Bnei Aaron. Do I need Kohanim? Anything prior to that? And again, when I say anything, I mean just Shechita. So that does need a Kohen. That's the Braisa's Diak in the Pasuk. Now, our Mishnah taught us that a tamei, it's not preferred for him to do the shechita, but b'diavad if he shech, so the shechita would be good. The Gemara says, what about the following? We have another brisa. The Gemara quotes another brisa, v'samach v'shachat. Many karbanos, most karbanos, you have a principle known as smicha, where the owner of the karban is going to place his hands on top of the animal and apply pressure to the top of the head of the animal. Okay, smicha. We'll talk more about smicha later in the Masechta, but right now we're quoting from the Torah. V'samach v'shachat masmicha b'tahorim, avshchita b'tahorim. So what the Braisa says is that just like smicha has to be done by tahor, and how do I know that smicha has to be done by somebody's tahor? Stay tuned. You probably can already guess the answer, but stay tuned. So just like smicha has to be done by somebody who's tahor, so too shchita has to be done by somebody who's tahor. So it sounds like, in other words, if this is a bona fide drasha, sounds like a tamei can't shecht on any level. Not midoraisa, not midorabanan. That's what it sounds like from the Braisa. The Gemara answers very simply, midorabanan. No. The Braisa just simply means that even though it sounds like drasha, but really the truth of the matter is it's just a din derabanan. Meaning that a tamei cannot shecht, but that's only on a rabbinic level. Why? For the reason we just articulated. Because if the tamei shechts, then the chances are that he's going to touch the basar after the shechita, and disqualify the carbon. To avoid that, we're not going to have the tamei shecht altogether. But that really is a din derabanan. And may ikar a din, according to the strict letter of the law, a tamei could do the shechita. Maishna smicha. Now, in the braisa, it was kind of an assumed point that when doing smicha, the person has to be tar. Why should that be? So the Gemara says, dechsiv, lifnei Hashem. Now, the answer is because lifnei Hashem. Meaning, where are you doing smicha? Lifnei Hashem, you're in the Azara. Who can go into the Azara? Only those people who are Tahor. People who are Tamei cannot go into the Azara. Now, I'll talk more about this later this morning, but let's go over these halachas. In other words, it's just, you got to know them really clearly to appreciate this, but to appreciate the Gemara later on as well. Meaning, various levels, the degrees of Tumah are excluded from various points of the Beis HaMikdash. A Mitzora. I'll say this now, I'll say this again later. A Mitzorah is barred from all three Machanos, meaning the way that we divide Yerushalayim is into three levels, right? And just like in the Midbar you had Machane Yisrael, Machane Levi, Machane Shechina, so too in Yerushalayim proper, you had also these three divisions of Machane Yisrael, Levi, and Shechina. Machane Yisrael is basically Yerushalayim, not basically, is Yerushalayim, meaning anything within the walls of Yerushalayim is considered Machane Yisrael. Machane Levi is Harabayis. In other words, when we discuss Masechta Midos, we'll discuss this in more detail. The Har Habayis is a circumscribed area within Yerushalayim. Within Har Habayis, obviously, you have the Beis HaMikdash, the Azara and the Beis HaMikdash. So Har Habayis is considered Machane Leviyah. And then you have Machane Shechina. Machane Shechina is the Azara. Not to be confused, by the way, in other words, if you look at the diagram, you'll see that there's the Azara and right outside of that is Ezros Nashim. Ezros Nashim is part of Har Habayis. It's not part of the Azara. When we talk about Azara, in other words, if I'm heading eastbound into the courtyard, into the temple courtyard, I'm walking through Shar Nikanor, the Nicanor gates, and once I walk through the Nicanor gates, so now I'm in the Azara. This is Machane Shechina. Okay, so Yerushalayim, Har Habayis, and the Azara, and obviously, including the Azara, obviously, is the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash is situated in the Azara. Now, who is excluded from what? A, Mitzar is excluded from all three. Mitzar cannot go into any one of the Gemal Machanos. If you have a Zav or a Zava, or a Nida, or a Balkari, so they're excluded from Har Habayis. In other words, they can be in Yerushalayim, but they cannot be in Har Habayis. If you have a Tamei Meis, Tamei Meis can be in Area 1, Area 2, can be in Yerushalayim, can be in Har Habayis. A Tamei Meis cannot be in the Azara. Okay. When all said and done, meaning again, it's important to know all those. Everything I just said, it's really important to know in general, specifically for Adaf as well. But in other words, Smicha has to be done Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem is in the Azara. Which Tamei person can be in the Azara? And the answer is very simple. All of the above. A, B, and C. Right? Your Mitzora, your Zav, your Zava, your Nida, your Yoledes, your Tamei Meis. Nobody, none of them can be in the Azara. So, why is it that the Torah person has to do Smicha? It's a very simple reason. Because to do Smicha, you have to be in the Azara. And to be in the Azara, it means you can't be Tamei. Nobody, no Tamei person can be in the Azara. Good. So now that we made that point, so Maishna Smicha Dichsiv Lifnei Hashem, Shechita Nami Haksiv Lifnei Hashem. So in other words, the Shechita also has to be Lifnei Hashem. So just like we've rejected the idea outright that a Tamei person could be doing Smicha, simply by definition, you can't be in the Azara. Well, the same thing is true regarding Shechita, right? So the Gemara says, no, Efshar D'Avid Sakin Aruka V'Shachet. So the Gemara says, well, not necessarily, because what you'll do is you'll take a really long knife, you'll stand outside the Azara. Now, you're standing outside the Azara, you're in Har Habayis. So you're standing outside the Azara, we're only talking about one kind of Tamei now at this point in time. Meaning because the Zav and the Zava and the Nida can't even be in Har Habayis. Or, I guess we can entertain that they have a really long knife. But now you're really stretching imagination. But in other words, but we're really talking about a Tamei Meis. Tamei Meis now is standing outside of the Azara, and with a really long knife. And that's, so at least logistically he's able to shecht. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine. So why don't we say this, something similar to Smicha? Smicha nami, Efshar D'Ma'ayel Yadei V'Samech. So the Gemara says, okay, now Smicha gets a little trickier, because Smicha requires your hands to be on the head of the animal. The animal itself has to be in the Azara, has to be. So what are you going to do now? So you're going to be standing in the doorway of Shar Nikanor, or any of the other doorways. Elsewhere, the Gemara has debates whether or not the inside of the doorway has the Kedusha, the threshold has the Kedusha of the area that it circumscribes. For another machlokus for another time. But right now, I could discuss in just a simple abstract. You're standing on the border of the Azara, right outside of the Azara, and you just simply put your hands in and you put them on top of the head of the animal. But obviously, you see, it's different though. In other words, with a knife, you can physically, your entire body can physically be outside of the Azara. But if you're taking your hands and you're putting on the head of the animal, so obviously your hands have to now be inside of the Azara. And so now, this is a big topic of today's daf, Bia B'miksas. So now you partially went into the Azara. Is that okay or is that not okay? The correct answer is it's a machlokas. But the Gemara is now entertaining this very discussion. So, Efshar D'Ma'ayel Yadei V'Samech Kasavar Bia b'miksa shma bia. So the brisa is of the opinion, kasavar meaning the brisa, because we're describing the brisa, obviously. The brisa is of the opinion that bia b'miksa shma bia. That partial entrance into the area is considered entrance, and therefore no can do. Meaning there's simply no logistic way where you could do smicha, where the animal's in the azara, animal can't go out. You're out of the azara, you can't go in, because you're tamei. And now logistically, it's just impossible. And because the Bryce is of the opinion that Bia B'miksa Shema Bia, so logistically now it's impossible. There's just no way possibly where you could do smicha and not violate the Isra of the Torah of a tummy person going into the Azara. Masha'en came by Shechita, it's possible. Because by Shechita, you're going to be holding the knife, you're going to be totally outside of the Azara. Knife is very long, you could do Shechita.
Correct.
In other words, right. Again, I'm assuming like the Mishnah, I'm just playing along with the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah and the Gemara is assuming that by you doing the Shechita, you're not going to render the animal tummy. Okay. And I know it's a lengthier discussion, but right. Oh, no. Smicha, no.
No.
Correct.
Even if you were in Tamei
Sheretz,
so you touch the animal, you would still...
No, in other words, Tumah is not going to be communicated to a live animal. The only time the animal is going to accept the Tumah is only after it's shechted. Smicha is done before Shechita. Right.
So how
would they do that? Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, I understand. Okay, right. Fine. In other words, right. It's not a logistic impossibility. It's challenging. Masha'en came by smicha. It's just simply impossible. In other words, impossible. So Rav Chista Masni Ibcha. Now, Rav Chista is going to teach us the same brisa, but his version of the brisa. And in his version of the brisa, it comes out a little bit different. V'samach v'shachat. In other words, same starting point. The Torah describes smicha and shechita. And then, mashchita b'tarim, masmicha b'tarim. Just like shchita has to be done by somebody's tower, so too smicha has to be done by somebody's tower. Now, what just happened over here is that the brisa just got inverted. And the brisa got inverted, and, right, it throws us for a loop. Meaning what? Now the brisa is really hard to read. Just like shchita has to be done by somebody's tower, so too smicha. Maisha shchita. Now, how do you understand that brisa? Shechita has to be done by somebody's Torah. Why? Because Dichsiv Lifnei Hashem. The author of this Brisa, according to Rav Chista's version of the Brisa, assumes starting point of the Brisa is Shechita has to be done Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem is in the Azara. Fine. So Smicha Namiksiv Lifnei Hashem. Okay. Smicha also says Lifnei Hashem. Efshe Dema'al Yadeh V'samech. So Rav Chista now in his version of the Brisa says, yeah, but you know what you could do with Smicha? You could take your hands and you could put them inside the azara and put them on the head of the animal. Now, obviously, Rav Chista is of the opinion when learning this version of the brisa that bia b'miksas lav shma bia. Well, the Gemara is going to make that point in just a moment, but that's clear. Shechita nami after David sakin aruka v'shachit. So the Gemara says, okay, but if there's a logistic way to do smicha, there's even a more logistic way, an easier way to do shechita and not be in the azara, and that is get a long knife, like we discussed earlier. So the Gemara says, no, hamani shemanate manihi. In Rav Chista's version of the Brisa, he subscribes to the view of shemanate mani. Did Tanya, we learned on the Brisa. V'shachas ben abakar lifnei Hashem, v'lo ashoch lifnei Hashem. Tanakama says that the shechita has to be done lifnei Hashem, meaning in the Azara, but the shochet doesn't have to be lifnei Hashem. Shochet can be outside the Azara, like we've been describing most of this morning. However, shemanate mani omer, minayin shiyu yadosh ashoch lifnei mena nishchat, tamalomer v'shachas ben abakar lifnei Hashem, Shelchres ben Bakar Yeh Lefnei Hashem. The opinion of Shimon HaTemani is that the shochet has to be even more interior than the animal. The starting point is that the animal has to be in the Azara. Has to be. And then, as far as Shimon HaTemani is concerned, not only does the animal have to be in the Azara, but the shochet also has to be in the Azara. And furthermore, the shochet has to be even more interior, meaning closer to the actual base of Mikdash. So according to Shimon HaTemani, the shochet has to be in the Azara, has to be. And so therefore, according to Shimon HaTemani, who the Gemara now is explaining, is in fact the author of this Brisa. So according to Shimon HaTemani, so the shochet has to be done by a Tahor, because it has to be in the Azara. And now, right, assuming that that's the starting point of the Brisa, that the shochet has to be there, and the Torah compares Shechita to Smicha, Somech also has to be in the Azara. Well, doesn't he have to be there anyway? Meaning, by virtue of the fact that he has to be in the Azara? No. Because the author of this Brisa, according to Rav Chista, holds that Bia b'miksas lo shma Bia. So therefore, at least it would be theoretically possible for the Tame person to simply just take his hands and put it inside in order to place his hands on top of the head of the animal. And so therefore what the Braisa is now teaching us is that even though logistically possible, but because of the hekesh of shechita and smicha, and just like shechita has to be done inside, smicha too has to be done inside as well. Okay. Where do we stand right now in terms of the Gemara? So in terms of shechita can be done by non-kohanim. The shechita is not an avoda. Even though you can have a machshava during shechita, again, as I pointed out in the beginning of Shir today, that part's confusing, but in other words, we just simply have to be able to hold both of those ideas concurrently. In terms of shechita, can it be done lechatchila? The Gemara taught us that yes. A non-kohen can shecht afilu lechatchila. The Gemara has a drasha to teach us that as well. What about smicha on the karban? So can a tummy person do smicha? Before I get to smicha. And why would the Mishnah use the language of b'di'evan? Answer says the Gemara is that it's not for the czar, not for the woman, and not for the Eved Kanani, but it's for the tummy. The tummy person cannot shecht lechatchila for fear that after he does the shechita, he's going to be touching the meat of the animal, rendering the animal tummy, therefore pasul, and so therefore lechatchila tummy person can't shecht. Logistically, how could a tummy person even do the shechita? And the answer is with a long knife. What about smicha? Can smicha be done by a tummy person? And so the answer is depends. Depends on how you view bia b'miksas. Meaning, obviously, the person, if his tummy can't go into the azara, the animal, the carbon itself has to be in the azara when smicha is being done on the animal. So can he take his hands and put it into the azara in order to do smicha on the animal? So it depends on how you hold up bia b'miksas. If you hold bia b'miksas, shma bia, if you hold that it is considered entrance into the azara, the answer, of course, is no. Categorically, the answer is no. If you hold that bia b'miksas, shma bia, lo shma bia, if just partial entrance, meaning just putting your hands into the azara, is not considering entering into the base of Mikdash, entering into the azara, I'll say better. So then, at least in theory, it's possible for the tummy person to just put his hands in. But then, even there, we just learned together a braisa that says that even though it's theoretically possible, but the hekesh of smicha and shechita has to be done in the azara, according to Rav Chisa's version of the braisa, so too smicha done as smicha as well. Okay, Amar Ula Amar Ish Lakish. So Ula says in the name of Reish Lakish that if you have somebody whose tummy, who takes his hands and puts them into the Azara, he's going to be subject to Malkus. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Bechol Kodesh Lo Siga, Uvemikdash Lo Savo. I hope I said the pasuk correctly. So the Mekish Biel Negia, right? In other words, the Torah over here, beginning of Parshas Tazria, describing a woman after having given birth, she's Tamea, she can't go into the Mikdash, and a connection between her not touching carbon, meaning because she's Tamea, and her not going into the Azara. Now, Mekish Biel Negia, Ma Negia B'miksa Shema Negia, Bia B'miksa Shema Bia. Now, when it comes to Negia, meaning partial touching, there really is no such thing as partial touching, meaning contact is contact. But that's exactly the point, though. In other words, once she were to make contact with one part of the carbon, the entire carbon becomes Tame. So, too, partial entrance, partial B is considered entrance as well. And therefore, taking a step into the Azara, or putting your hands into the Azara, is a violation of a tummy person going into the Azara. Clearly, Ula's of the opinion. And by the way, parenthetically, just, I always make mental notes. Meaning, we don't find that often Amorai making drashas. Drashas are usually made by Mishnah, Brisas, Tanayim, right? Not often, you do find it. But not often you find Amorayim actually making a drasha in the Torah. So, and by the way, I say make a drasha, meaning my assumption is, and probably correct assumption, that he had a Masorah going back. But normally you don't find it. So just an interesting mental note when you see Amorai making drashas. But anyway, but Ul is of the opinion that Bia b'miksa shma bia. And therefore, if you just simply insert your hand, if you're tummy, insert your hand into the Azara, so that is a lav in the Torah subject to Malkus. Fine. Esvei, Rav Oshia Le'ula, the Gemara asks the following question based on the following braisa. So let's say you have a Mitzorah who goes through the Tahara process. Again, quick refresher, crash course in Tahara Samitzorah. So in other words, after free and clear, after given an all clear sign by the Kohen that the person no longer has Saras, so it goes through a 7/8 day purification process on day one. So the procedure with the pair of birds, shechting one of the birds, letting the other one go free, shaving his entire body, and then counting Shiv and Akim, counting 7 clean days. On the 7th day, so, Tovel's in the mikvah, and that night now is mostly free and clear of his Tumas Saras. However, still, Mechusar Kippurim, still lacking Karbanos. what he'll do is on the eighth day, so he'll bring a set of karbanos included in which is a karban hashem. I'll point out in just a moment why I'm singling out the karban hashem. On the eighth day, he'll bring his karban hashem, and he'll have a full kapara on day number eight when he brings his karban. Now, as a mechusar kapara, he cannot eat karban, nor can he go into the azara. So, slightly problematic, a bit of a challenge, in that part of the Torah process on day eight with the mitzorah is that he needs to have applications of the blood of the karban asham applied to his right earlobe, his right thumb, and his right toe. Big toe. And so, problem. The blood of the karban asham can't go outside of the azara, and he, being a mechusar kippurim, can't go into the azara. What is he to do? And the answer is, the Torah tells us what he's supposed to do. And that is, take his right ear, and take his right thumb, and take his right toe, and insert into the azara. Normally, these are prohibited acts. Okay, they're normally prohibited acts, but in this particular case, the Torah says, mutter, meaning, for the mitzvah going through the Torah process, it is permissible. And so therefore, he's going to be inserting his right ear, his right thumb, his right toe, into the azara, so that the blood application can be placed on these areas of his body, in order for him to go through the Torah process. Simple, so far so good. That's just the basics. Now, the Bryce over here deals with the following scenario. You have a mitzvah, shechal shmini shel aliyos b'erev HaPesach, so it's eighth day now falls on Erev Pesach. V'ra keri bo bayom. And now, we have a complication. On that very day, there's also a balkeri. What is he to do? V'tavo. Any tovos in the base of Mikdash. I didn't mean that. Strike that from the record. Any tovos. So now he's what's called an halacha, a tful yom. Amru chachamim. Afa pishen tful yom acher nichnas. Ze nichnas. A tful yom can go into the azara? No. A tful yom cannot go into the azara. But over here, let him go in. And by the way, when we say let him go in, we don't mean let him go all the way in. Meaning, let him put in his right ear, his right thumb, his right toe, in order to receive the applications. Because mutar shiavo esei sheish bokares v'yitcha esei she'ein bokares. Because what do we gain in doing so? He's able to bring carbon Pesach. And so, mutav, it's better. Shiyavo esse sheish bokares, a positive commandment, carbon Pesach, which failure to bring carbon Pesach brings about a kares penalty, and should push off esse she'ein bokares, the tvulyum to go into the azara, that doesn't come with it, the kares prohibition, and so therefore let one esse be doch another esse. Rav Yochanan Amar. Now, even before we make the point, meaning all this is going to be a question on Ula, but the Gemara just wants to clarify that Rav Yochanan slightly disagrees with one of the points that we made. Rav Yochanan Amar, Dvar Torah Afilo Esei Inbo. For a Tful Yom to go into the Azara is not even a violation of an Esei. Shenemar v'yamod Yoshava b'kal Yudav Yishlam b'beis Hashem l'fnei Chatzer Chadashah. Right, the pasuk in Devar Yamim describes Yehoshaphat in front of the Chatzer Chadash, the new Chatzer. New Chatzer. Chatzer of the Beis Hamikdash isn't exactly new in the time of Yehoshaphat. So my Chatzer Chadash, I'm Rav Yochanan, Shechichu Badvarim, Va'amru Tful Yom, Ayikanis, the Machan Levia. So that a Tful Yom cannot go into Machan Levia. Can't go into the Har HaBayis area. But anyway. In other words, according to Rav Yochanan, it's not a violation of the Torah, it's only a violation, it's a rabbinic violation. Okay, but still. In other words, but it's the same basic point, which is that, look, he is a mitzvah who has now undergone both a tefillah b'mikdash, I keep saying that, he has undergone tefillah, and he's also had Erev Shemesh, and the only thing now he's lacking is mechusar kippurim. He's allowed to go into Machane Levia, he's allowed to put his hands and his feet, his hand and his foot into the azar in order to receive the blood application. The problem is, and it's Erev Pesach, and the problem is compounded with the fact that he becomes a Balkari that day, and he tovled. And now, because of the need, the necessity to bring Karm Pesach, so you know what? He's going to get a pass. Normally, shouldn't even be in the Harabayas area, but he's going to get a pass to do so. Now, all this sets us up now for the following question. You, Ula, are of the opinion that partial entrance is considered entrance. Heichi ma'alya yadei bebahonos. Idividi asei sheish bokarisu. I don't understand. So this person now, according to you, Ula, is going into the Azara. And I say going in, just his hands and his feet. But remember, you, Ula, are of the opinion that Bia b'mikzah shma Bia. So now he's going to be violating an asay, and not just an asay, but in other words, he's a tamei person. Again, mechusa kippurim, but now more than mechusa kippurim, he's a tful yom of a balkeri. So vis-a-vis the azara, he can't be there, and if he's there, subject to the kari's penalty. So according to you, Ula, what was the equation of the braisa? The equation of the braisa is, well, going in is only a violation of an asay that doesn't have kares, and that should override and it should be overridden by karim pesach. That's an asay that does have kares. But according to you, Ula, both of them are an asay sheish bo kares, because you say bia b'mikzah shma bia. So in other words, he's a balkeri tful yom. For him to extend any part of his body into the azara is a kares violation. So how did you understand the braisa? Amrle mituncha. So Ula just simply says, look, you see your question that you just brought, literally your load that you just brought, your question you just brought, your question is your answer. I'm going to answer your question with your question. Shani mitzara, ho v'huta l'sara so huta l'kir yom. In other words, look, he has a heter. In other words, he already is given a special dispensation of the Torah where he is allowed to extend his hands into the azara. So once that heter is given to him vis-a-vis his tzara'as, so therefore the same heter therefore is given to him vis-a-vis his balkari as well. Okay, period. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Obviously, there's more to go. Yeah, more to go. But basically, the question now becomes the answer. Once heter was given to him, so therefore heter was given to him. Okay. We'll pause here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up exactly at this point.